Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor. Survivor.
21 South Africans. 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Winter Federal.
Swammerheist.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million shekels.
1 million rubles.
Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor Global. I'm your host Shannon Gates here for the second episode of Survivor Global, getting these international guests in to talk about US Survivor, in this case, Island of the Idols, episode 6. So please welcome our first South African representative, a known superfan and strategist who's here to break down this hyper-strategic episode, the great Jacques Berger. Jacques, thank you so much for being here.
Sure, Shannon, that's quite an impressive resume you read. Thank you so much for those kind words. it's great to be here. I'm super excited. Glad you're doing this podcast and glad to be a part of it.
Yeah, and like underreported story, I'm pretty sure Survivor Global is like a good luck charm because we did episode 4 and now episode 6. And to me, those have been the two best episodes of the season. And I don't have spoilers about this. I just feel like it must be a good luck charm.
It definitely is, Shannon. I mean, everything you touch turned to gold. You got the Midas hand. So I'm down to be on the stream.
Yeah, I mean, this episode I thought was really, really fun. So much there, like, you know, we talk about how US Survivor is only 42 minutes and it never feels like enough. This felt like a lot. They crammed a lot into 42 minutes, like Reward, Island of the Idols, a teaching moment for us all to learn about ourselves, immunity, and a crazy vote. They got it done.
Yes, and to add to that, they also had a lot of, you know, individual moments. You know, we saw that conversation with Nora, we saw Jamal and Kelly dancing, all those. So even just adding those soft touches that, you know, doesn't always, it's not always front and center to the strategic component of a game, but just getting us to flesh out these characters. I think the editors are doing a remarkable job this season.
Yeah, the tarantula moment, which like, I think that would be quite Survivor. Like, this is why I wouldn't go on Survivor, but like if there was a tarantula in my hair, that'd be it for me in general.
Yeah, I don't know about tarantulas, but yeah, there's a lot of stuff, you know, crawling around US jungles, crabs and whatnot. So yeah, and I mean if you got a bush of hair like Elizabeth has and that happens, I can just imagine it's gotta be nerve wracking.
Yeah. Well, Jacques, we spoke to you, I don't know how long it was ago now. I mean, time has really just kind of become very vague for me, but we spoke to you on your deep dive. How have you been since then?
Yeah, that was about what, 2 months ago.
I have no idea.
A lot has changed. Oh, not a lot has changed. I've hot off the press. You're one of the first people to know this, and now there's some people. But I'm starting my own company.
Going to do my own thing,
business wise. Yeah, so a new venture for me in that regards, which I'm very excited about. And yeah, otherwise it's been good. I'm a bit sluggish this morning. Since this is the global podcast, I think we can discuss one or two other global issues. And you mentioned this in your chat with Rob about, you know, what's the difference between rugby and Aussie rules. And yesterday, South Africa won the Rugby World Cup.
Mm-hmm. Congrats.
That was quite epic. So, yeah, thank you so much. quite a great moment for our country for a lot of different reasons. But yeah, so very high from that. Our country is like, everybody's just wearing green flags and wearing green shirts all over the place. And so I'm a bit sluggish from yesterday's sporting, but totally down to do Survivor.
Look, I know nothing about rugby, but I take the win as my own, being South African. And if Australia wins, I take that win too. That's the whole thing. Like when you move around a lot, I think I can claim both. Like that's fine, right? So congratulations to both of us.
Thank you. Yeah. And also you're getting married soon. How's your arrangements going? Your trip to Fiji, very excited to hear about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going. I think a lot of people are like always making fun. Like whenever I post some like crazy Survivor thing, they're like, are you procrastinating planning your wedding now? And it's kind of become like a bit like to let everyone know I really have planned my wedding. Like I've somehow got it done. So it's going, but I think I'm going to have to slow down the podcasting at a point and actually focus on it completely. But I'm excited. It's in 5 weeks from today.
5 weeks.
Crazy stuff. Next week ends my bachelorette party. It's a lot.
Yeah, I'm very happy for you.
Thank you. It's going to be good. And your face socks, we'll talk about it. But, you know, I'm probably going to get face socks for the groomsmen. So I couldn't believe it when I saw it on the show last week. Like, I've been researching face socks. All I have are ads for face socks. And then on Survivor, there are face socks. So I just can't escape it.
Survivors everywhere. As soon as it's like, as soon as you hear a new word or you see like a new company, and then you just pick it up, it's everywhere. And Survivor's the same. You know, you can't dodge it once you're in.
Yeah, and like honestly, like, everyone knows how susceptible I am to the sponsors. Like, I wasn't super into the face socks before. My fiance really wanted his groomsmen to wear his face on their socks. And I was like, ugh, that's not really very Kate Middleton-esque, which is really what my wedding's meant to be. But then once it was on Survivor, I'm now like really into it. So I feel like it's working again, where I'm just like, whatever Survivor tells me to do, I will do. It's a very dangerous mindset.
Listen, on that note, what the funniest one off this past week was the one with Face on My Sock. I laughed so hard when I heard that song. It was lyrically one of the best one-offs I've ever heard.
It was amazing. Genius. And it's another thing that's making me want to get face socks for my wedding. So everyone is just working to that goal, I think. But Jack, we need to talk about this episode. And I want to talk about, firstly, how you're feeling about the season in general. I mean, it's a pretty crazy concept. Rob and Sandra back. Are you liking it?
Look, I know I'm going to be a bit against the grain, but I love the season. I love this premise. I know it's a bit goofy. I know it's a bit gimmicky at times, but I'm enjoying this whole Sandra and Rob living there. Not because of Sandra and Rob. I think if you have anybody who's a good narrator to almost, you know, drive this island, it works well for me. I enjoy it much more than, let's say, you know, Island of Secrets. We just go over and there's a note, you know, and then it's almost like you have to now read the note to, you know, production, and you just have to figure out yourself what's happening. Where I think having two people explain it, and two people who are witty and funny and, you know, can express themselves well, like Rob and Sandra, I think they are spectacular. I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying this cast. I think they've got a great group of people. I don't think there's any like real duds, lots of complex personalities. And overall, I'm super happy. Yeah, I'm enjoying it, and hopefully it can you know, continue, keep this momentum, you know, into the post match. You know, not one of the seasons where it starts really high and then it just deflates.
Because we have lots of one of those really good people. Yeah, that's the problem. Is like, it is a great cast, but like I love Jason. He was one of my favorites. I love Chelsea, Vince, like Ronnie and Molly. Tom was fine, but like that's a lot. You know. I hope that the rest of the cast can carry it through the merge. I do think that they can. Like, who are you really enjoying from this cast?
You mentioned the name now. My winner pick was Molly. I think this is my worst placing winner pick ever.
Couldn't do much worse than second last, I should hope.
Yeah, that's worse. But no, I enjoy these big personalities like Nora. I know we'll get to her later. I enjoy what she's doing on the screen, you know, the crazy antics she's bringing and the humor she's giving the editors time to work with. But then you juxtapose it next to, you know, like, I want to say cool level-headed game players like Tommy and Jamal. You know, you can see they therefore, you know, play the social game. And then you've got, like you mentioned, Jason now, who's out, who's a super fan and, you know, got a strategic mind. So, yeah, those are people I like. Get everybody, and I think it's a good composition, and we've lost some good people, but I don't think, you know, we're in trouble yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's a kind of a weird cast where there's not anyone I'm like completely rooting for above anyone else. Like, I kind of just really like everyone across the board, which is, there's no one like a Christian Hubicki, for example, who like I was so rooting for. I just like most of them, which is like, I kind of want someone to throw all my weight behind, but it's good to have like such, you know, a good scale across the board that I really like them. I think Jason might have been my favorite. It was only when he got voted out that I was like, I really, really like Jason. I'm really upset about this.
Yeah, you make an interesting point, Shannon. I spoke to Meryl about this, Meryl from our season, and she asked me, like, you know, now that your winner picks out, who are you supporting? And I said, you know what? Everybody. It's a cool group of people. It's not like like you said, it's not like I'm on this one train now. It's almost like I'm taking a backseat and saying, I'm not supporting this person. I'm watching the show from a holistic point of view and seeing, you know, how it plays out, because, you know, I don't have this interest in a specific individual per se, but it overshadows the show. I'm just now enjoying the show. And I think that's why the season is, it almost feels like it's a different season than we've had before. And maybe that's the reason why. It's very, very cool for me to watch it now. Very excited.
No extreme duds anywhere, but I just don't think there's like, I mean, Elaine, I think is a star, but I don't think there's anyone who's like extremely a star. I think it's just like a really good group. But Elaine was a big part of this episode. We want to talk about this episode, which, you know, we were kind of talking a little bit on Twitter. We're going to talk about, I think, the headline, which is Aaron's decision. And just to kind of backtrack for anyone who hasn't listened to some of the other content or some of the exit interviews, It was a very different story from what we saw to what happened. So that really changed my perspective. So just to give the backstory to that is that what we saw was Vokai wanting to vote out Elaine. We saw Aaron and to a degree Missy like making very legitimate inroads with Vokai. I mean, the face socks that literally convinced me to get face socks at my wedding, that's an important thing. And like every conversation that Vokai had revolved around this. It was like, you know, we need to get rid of Elaine, pulling in Aaron and Missy. And Jason even said in his exit interview that that little powwow they have where they all agree on Elaine was Frank invited. They were actually all agreeing on Aaron. So that's what we missed in the edit, was that they were targeting Aaron or Missy. They saw them as way bigger threats. They saw them as leading the vote against Elaine. They didn't want to go with their plan. They kind of wanted to get Aaron and or Missy to flip on Elaine, to vote out Aaron in the end. On a 4-2-2, or if Missy didn't flip on a 4-3-1, so he kind of would have voted himself out of the game, and then to have Missy come back totally isolated, having, you know, voted for Elaine, if that's what she did. So they were trying to kind of reclaim the plan that way, which is very, very different, I think, to what we saw. So what do you think of the move here with all the information that we now have?
Look, yeah, like you said, there's a lot that's come out. I think it's Survivor's sort of weird game where if you're playing from the bottom, you want to create chaos, right? And if you're playing from the top, you want to create order, if that's an adequate way to explain it. And that's usually, you know, people at the bottom, they're scrabbling. People at the top, they want to just keep all their ducks in a row. And we've got this weird situation here where it's a 4-4 standoff. You know, it's like this, it creates a stalemate. So there's nobody's ruling at the top, nobody's ruling at the bottom. And everybody's going to be looking for, you know, who's the person to flip. I think Aaron is the best guy to approach and say, yo, listen, come to, you know, jump to our side, you know, join the Vokai people. We got the numbers. We can take care of you. But at the same time, I think what also you need to consider is, these guys are, the Lyra people are down in the numbers. I mean, they've lost Vince and Chelsea, early. I think they're down 3-1. So I would, so I do agree with the Lyra people of with Aaron's move of saying, listen, okay, I'm gonna stick to my original people, even if going forward that's not necessarily, you know, 5 votes down, but you need to survive this tribal council, you need to survive the next one. And I think with Aaron going with the Lyra people saying let's get the grip on this tribe, very similar to what we did in and I don't want to speak too much about my season.
No, you
but
definitely
you
can.
The
like,
time,
there's going to be spoilers for your season. Okay. It's your lived experience.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Very, very similar to what we did when we swapped the first tribe swap, when we got to Laomai, and it was me, Felix, and Tanya. Even though Tanya and Felix were the two people I resonated with the least in my tribe, I still needed to get myself into a position where I'm not saying get to the top, but where I have order and I wanted to create order within that tribe. And that is voting out one of the opposition, opposing tribes, people. And then after that, if you still want to make a move and vote out your own, you're still sort of in control. Mm-hmm. So I think Aaron made the right move here. We're saying he's sticking with his Lyra people, but even in the next round, they can out of the next round go and say, okay, listen, let's say you mentioned Elaine. Elaine's a threat to win. And then they can still cannibalize her. And he wouldn't have, you know, he still get given himself 2 or 3, you know, votes into the game. Where if he jumps ship now, nothing stops him from being the target the next round. So I think to just at the first vote in a new tribe to get a footing and make sure you got a majority, whether it's by tribal lines, which this season it is, or whatever metric you use, get a grip on the tribe. And if you want to do some fun antics or maybe get a big guy out pre-merge, do it then. But losing your majority and your grip at the swap, I don't think that's a wise move. So I think Aaron made the correct move.
I see your point, and it's a hard thing for me to argue against because I kind of have to argue about my thoughts on what we saw and then what happens in actuality based on the exit interviews. But what I would say about, you know, kind of voting on tribal lines now and then switching next episode is like it didn't flow with the language that Lyra were putting out there. They said it's a line in the sand. They used war analogies. Like they didn't make it feel very fluid, and they weren't even trying to, you know, work with Vokai in any way. They were like, it's us against you. And then, you know, if you're going to try to go to them next time, like obviously they'll be desperate, but I don't think that they were like really making those genuine connections. It was very much like a harsh binary opposition against that other side. Looking at what I thought I saw, which was Aaron, you know, making connections, I was like, you need to integrate. I mean, that Tommy connection seemed really relevant for him and very, very key for him. Because if you look at where Aaron and Lyro are, they're not in a great spot. And I have to say, like, some of it's circumstantial. They lost a lot of challenges, but a lot of it's self-inflicted. Last time I talked about, you know, getting rid of Chelsea, I thought that was terrible. They're super down in the numbers. And, you know, they're probably going to merge at 13. You know, modern US Survivor is not unpredictable. And then there's six of them at most. And that includes Dean, who they've alienated, and Karishma, who's not with them. Like, they don't have the numbers. So I think fluidity behooves them. So yeah, okay, if you want to maybe change it up next time, okay, but just like based on the language they were using, it was very much like us against you. And it's like, well, why would you want to draw a line in the sand? You're on the losing side of that line. Maybe not for this one next vote at tribe, you know, at the tribe swap where you might not even go to tribal council, but then at the merge. So if Aaron survives next week, then he will be the merge boot. That's why I see it for Aaron. So they're down in the numbers. They're not in a good spot at all. Largely self-inflicted. I feel like Aaron has two allies in the game, like Elizabeth and Missy. He's not even close with Elaine. He doesn't have Dean and Karishma. He's now alienated all of Vokai, and that's a terrible spot. But then I heard the exit interview, and I heard that those connections that he was making with Vokai weren't genuine. I heard they were targeting him, and I feel like that's very different. So now I kind of feel like he should have stuck with Lyro, because that's better than voting yourself out of the game, for sure. And also, it's better than going with a group of people who are against you, and it's not genuine. So I guess my order would be, reintegrate with Vokai when you don't have the numbers, find your opportunities, find your relationships, because Lyro is a sinking ship, get off the ship. Then next, I would say stick with Lyro, take your two allies, survive through the pre-merge and hope for the best. And my third option would be switch to Vokai, who you haven't actually connected with, which is apparently what happened. So yeah. I guess now I'm thinking Vokai weren't a real option to him, and he should stick with Lyro. So I got there in the end.
Look, one thing I want to also mention about this move, and I think Aaron put himself in a tricky situation. I think he's actually a host, not for the move, but the way he did it. Mm. Because what he did is he went to them and said, you know, Tommy, I'm with you. Jason, I'm with you. You know, so he gave him reassurance, and then, you know, that crumbled when he didn't go along with the plan. So I think he put himself in a good position, but it's one of the scenarios where it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And I think, and we'll get to this later to the advantage, but I think Aaron had an opportunity to, instead of just reassuring them and then, you know, stabbing them in the back, you have to stab somebody in the back. I think he should have went to, you know, maybe Tommy and said, Tommy, listen, I can't tell you how I know this or what's going to happen, but we are going to come out on top. And I give you my word that you are not the target. Mm-hmm. So stay with your people. I mean, if you're going to go 4-4, stay with your people. We are going to come out on top. I just want to let you know that it's not going to be you. You can jump ship with us. I'm not asking you to do that. I'm letting you know now what's going to happen, so that when we come back tomorrow night, or we come back, you know, tomorrow morning, that you know where I stand with you and that I do have your back. If he did that, you know, the whole tribal played out the way it did. He came back and said, listen, I couldn't tell you about the advantage. You were afraid you might have had an idol, et cetera, et cetera. But do you understand that I had your back? And then Tommy can be like, yo, you know, this guy gave me his word. You know, he told me he had my back. So the next time, you know, one, you have now Tommy's not mad at you. You know, he's like, well, this guy really, you know, what he said was true. So you can use that to broker some, you know, kind of currency going forward. Or next time you tell him something, he's going to believe you. And then you can, you know, pull the wool over his eyes, because whatever Aaron's going to say to Tommy, you know, he's not going to, it's because Tommy's default is going to be, Aaron, that's baloney. I'm not buying it. End of discussion. So I think Aaron made the right move to secure himself numerically in the tribe, but I think the way that it was not the correct way to go about.
Yeah. And I think it's really hard because we can't trust the edit, because they lied to us so much about what actually happened. But, you know, but based on what we were seeing, you know, Aaron and Missy really were going to flip, even Elizabeth, instead of going rocks. So we can't really know, but it really did seem like that.
I would not be surprised if, let's say, like you said, what came out of Exit Press, if that was the plan. And then when Elaine rocked up with an advantage, you know, they backed down and said, okay, well, let's just stick to the 4-4 plan, because now we got that, you know, we got some leverage. So I can see that happening, even though we didn't see it in the show. And I think that's probably the reason why they went back and said, well, you know, let's stick to the cool kids who's got some ammunition in this war, if it's a war we're going to fight.
Yeah. But just not knowing based on the edit, like, I'm wondering how well Aaron is reading the situation with Vokai. Like, I mean, it's a little crazy that they're so mad at him, considering they walked into tribal council expecting to target him and vote him out of the game in a humiliating way where he would basically have trusted them and then voted himself out of the game. Now they're super mad at him, which seems a little bit crazy, but like if he's reading that they're kind of not really working with him and that they want to be voting him out, like I understand why he wasn't really working with them. But I totally agree with you that Aaron was going to piss people off, you know, and how can he go forward from here and actually make relationships in some capacity? It's crazy how many people he's alienated through these first six episodes of the game. As I said, I feel like I'm looking around and finding, like, who were his allies? Like, there's no one really for him. And he has Merge Boot now painted all over him and a huge Merge where he's a big physical target if he doesn't win immunity. And he doesn't have a lot of people, maybe Missy, but only Missy to really vouch for him. So how can you make friends? I think that needs to be Aaron's number one priority. Like, I need to make some friends because I have very few in the game. So for me, at first, I thought, there seem to be friends for you and Vokai, go with that. Now knowing that they didn't do that, I take your point where it's like, how can you maintain some relationships or try build relationships within this very divisive group? Even if you're going to stick with Lyro, can you not piss people off so that they're super angry at you when they get their power back and they get their numbers back at the merge? They won the battle, but I feel like Lyro is still losing the war. And now Vokai are very, very, very angry at them. And I don't see it going well for Lyro moving forward.
Definitely. Look, Aaron needs to find some seed money somewhere to start something, because I don't know where he's going to get it. Like you said, I think he's painted himself into a corner. Unless maybe he hooks up in the swap or in the merge of somebody like a Jack and a Jamal, somebody he hasn't played with, you know, in any iteration. I'd be like, guys, listen, I've got nowhere else to go.
But that, the if fact that that's his best bet is so sad. Like, his best bet are exactly, the few people exactly. He hasn't met, because he's alienated almost every other person he's played exactly. with. That's not great.
Exactly. Yeah, but I still maintain, I think mathematically did the correct thing, but the way that it is, you know, it's in a bit of a predicament now.
Well, I definitely think he did the correct thing instead of, like, going with people who wanted to vote him out. Now that I know those relationships, because for me, the way I look at the game is, you know, a Vokai that wants to work with Aaron and a Vokai that wants to vote him out, those are two very opposite things. So all the moves kind of have to work within that system. That's very, very different for me. So yeah, I mean, definitely don't work with, you know, don't go with Vokai's side and flip on your side to people who were actively trying to vote him out. But I just feel like, you know, his approach must have been off. The fact that they were coming for him, I know he's a big target, and I know that Jason said, like, they were considering how Elizabeth and Elaine had been to Island of the Idols, so they didn't want to target them because of idols. But, like, the fact that they landed on Aaron, he must have been too aggressive, as we've seen. He obviously was too much leading the plan. Like, he came to them, like, we have to go with Elaine. Like, dude, you don't have any power right now. Maybe go to them and be like, I'm loyal to you. What do you want to do? I know, and, you know, then you can try and steer it maybe more subtly or maybe more delicately away from Missy as an ally. But he came in like, it has to be Elaine. Like, he put them off, and they felt like, it's not your plan, it's our plan. Like, we're the ones who are in control. So he's obviously alienated them. He's my winner pick, but yeah, I think I would say now Merge Boot, unless he can find an idol or something.
Look, I mean, like I said, you've gone to worse than my winner pick, so
you could do one worse.
You can do one worse.
Yeah, she was good though. I understand why you did it, but yeah, not great job.
Yeah, no, it's that's where the cookie crumbles.
Yeah, so I think we agree. Yeah, Aaron, you know, he had to go with Lyro, but just not a great approach to it. And you just got to, like, that, you know, the more I look at Survivor, the more I podcast about it, I realize, like, it's mostly just making friends, right? Like, and Aaron doesn't have any friends, and that's the issue.
That is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you need to create a friend, as stupid as it sounds, when you're on that island, and it's very difficult. I don't want to get too much into it, but one thing I remember when I listened to an excellent interview, I think it was in Heroes, Healers, Hustlers on the Hustler Tribe. Was it Simone? She was a lawyer or an attorney or something. And she said how she struggled with, you know, she had a tertiary education, you know, she went and studied. And then all those people were like, you know, they were just almost like quote unquote blue collar workers, and how she didn't have a lot of middle ground to connect with them. And that's essentially what led to her downfall. She couldn't form those connections. Now, I know Aaron runs a gym from reading the stuff, but if you don't have a lot of in common with the people, it's very difficult to make those personal connections if you don't, you know, have something massively in common, or if you're from very different worlds. And I can see somebody like Aaron, you know, coming from a lot of a very different life than somebody like, let's say Jamal or Kelly, or even Nora. So I don't see where his INRO is in terms of what his common ground is to make allies, because that's something that's never on the forefront in terms of when you watch the show. But when you're there, you realize, you know, all these people who gym, you know, they talk about Instagram and how they gym and protein shakes and all that, because that's their lifestyle. And he needs to find something like that with these people very quickly. Otherwise, like I said, I think he's toast.
Well, for me, Aaron's like lack of social capital comes down to a lot of his strategic decisions. Like, to go back to the Chelsea vote, which, I mean, I think it's just going to be... Lyra will look back at that, I think, because Chelsea seemed like a friend and ally. She said in X interviews that she had an alliance with Aaron and Missy and Elizabeth and Dean. So that's an ally. And he chose to keep Karishma, definitely not an ally, over Chelsea. So, yes. You know, in a different world where Lyra are going to have six at the merge that includes Dean and Chelsea, and they haven't voted against Dean, then they could maybe take over Nora. Like, then I get it. Then be Lyra strong. But previously, you know, they've kept in Karishma. They've alienated Dean. Then now they're trying to be Lyra strong. Like, it's crazy to me. It's like they took a grenade to Lyra, and now they're trying to, like, pick up the pieces and put the shrapnel back together. Like, it's way too late for that. They completely destroyed Lyra. As they said last week, they said Lyra's been done. Like, it's over. And now they're trying to put it back together, and I think it's just way too late. But at the same time, I now get it, because Vokai weren't having it with Missy and Aaron either. They were targeting Missy and Aaron, so they had no better options on the other side. So, you know, Aaron has dug himself, I think, into a hole at this point. And, you know, every decision we're talking about from him is like, how can he make that slightly better? I don't think that in any case, in any version of these events, he was going to be in a good spot. You know, just the worst of that would have been voting himself out, and he didn't get to do that. You know, Elaine has saved them slightly, at least for the pre-merge, but, you know, not for the long term. I think Lyra have made a lot of mistakes to get them through the merge.
Yeah, but I want to put this to you. Let's say this new Vokai tribe loses again, right? What's Aaron's move then? Or the Lyra people, they have a majority. They've got 4-3. What do they do next? Let's say they have to go again.
Well, I mean, people are saying that they should throw a challenge to vote out a Vokai member. And I'm like, is that what we want? Like, that's more line in the sand stuff for a side that's not going to win. I don't know. I mean, I would think stay Lyra strong and vote out the Vokai member you think you can work with the least and try and bring in the others with you. But again, I just think they're in such a bad spot that I don't know where they go from here.
Okay.
What do you think?
Interesting. No, I don't think they should throw the challenge. You never want to go because, you know, it's up in the air. But if they do go, I think, you know, either they should, like you said, take out, I think, you know, Tommy is like, he's got a lot of friends. I think Tommy would be a wise guy to take out, you know, pre-merge.
But they're going to make Janet and Kelly so angry on the other side, and they're going to have the numbers,
yeah,
and they're going to vote for Aaron.
Yeah. Or what, this is a bit of a wild card move, but very similar to what, like I said, what we did in our season is say, listen, okay, now's our chance. You know, if Elaine, I know it's this narrative of if Elaine gets the win, she wins, but I mean, if she gets the win, she's going to win. So say, okay, guys, you know, this is round two. Let's build some trust. Let's knock out Elaine, get her out of a game. I mean, she doesn't have an idol, and I could see that happening as well.
Yeah, but for me, that's like hedging. That's like kind of doing both and neither, because as we've said, they didn't form any connections with Vokai. Vokai are so angry at them that, yeah, they can take out Elaine, but Vokai aren't going to be working with them just because they threw them a bone then. Like, Vokai are now angry about this, so they haven't integrated at all. At this point, they kind of have to go down the line. That's why I don't like it, because it's such a bad line for them. But if they change to Vokai now, is Tommy really going to say... They're so mad about the Jason thing. Is he going to get to the merge and be like, okay, guys, like, it's fine. I forgive you. Let's have a really fruitful, beneficial relationship together. Like, I don't see that being a good working relationship. They've been to one tribal council together, and it was a disaster. People were in literal tears. So those aren't going to be people who can have positive strategic relationships going forward, I don't think.
Yeah, the thing with Survivor is the game changes quickly, but it's got a bit of an inertia in the sense of, you know, the people who voted with 2-3 rounds ago, you know, it's that still keeps some momentum into the game.
Yeah, and surely you need some positivity as well in your relationships before going to a tribal council where they were attempting to vote you out in an embarrassing way. You made them cry and then voted out their ally. Like, I've never seen, you know, strategic relationships start in a worse way than that would be. That's terrible. Yeah, like, I don't know if they can get past that for a really good long-term relationship.
I do agree with you.
The Face Sox lied to us. They told us it was going to be this like important relationship between Tommy and Aaron, but not even face locks could bring them together. So I don't really
is that a legal move to put your a photo of your kids on your socks? I mean, yeah. I would have, you know, loved to have, you know, let's say a picture ingrained into the inside of my sweater of, you know, maybe my wife, or, you know, a picture of my dog, you know, take it with you. I feel part of the attrition battle of Survivor is being away from your family and friends, and having a picture of them, that's a bit of a game changer. I don't know how I feel on the legitimacy of what he pulled off.
I kind of agree.
Or production let him obviously, you know, they have a say in the wardrobe. But if ever somebody goes again, I'm going to tell them, listen, take a picture, sew it to the inside of your jacket. And they, it's like, just take random pictures. Say, of this jacket, I'm representing the people of, let's say you're in America, I'm representing the people of Wisconsin, you know, and they just like put all these people inside of it. And you've got your brother, your mother, your wife, your pictures of it inside of your jacket.
Yeah, because lonely, pictures of loved ones is meant to be like a luxury item or a reward. Exactly. You're not supposed to just be able to have it on your feet.
Yeah, I think this is one and only time. I don't think we're going to see this again. People are going to take liberties. Matt and Wagon and Jeff's going to be like, okay, guys, we did it once.
Is this what Jeff is thinking about? Like, if Jeff's above this. Like, Jeff does not care what socks the contestants wear. But I have a shirt with my cat on it, and I would wear that if I went back on.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, I want to talk about Elaine, who was the other main character, or probably the main character of the episode, who really saved Lyra for the short-term future. Like, and then I think that, seeing some pretty bad stuff. But I think she did pretty well. What did you think of Elaine in this episode?
Look, I think Elaine, she's very good on your TV screen to watch. Such a relatable person. I think, as stupid as it sounds, I think there's a lot more Elaines watching Survivor than there are Deans, if that makes sense. So I think she's very relatable to a lot of the people, and that's why she's so cool and such a genuine person. So and it's difficult to be somebody you're not on that show, and Elaine is just herself, and I think that's why she's doing so well, both in the game and with the reception she's been getting outside of the show. With regards to Advantage, I definitely think she made the correct decision. We can chat about the Island of the Idols later if that's part of a segment. I think she did the right thing, got the advantage. I think there was a brilliant bit with Elizabeth where, and you must credit Elizabeth, when she told her, they spoke about it, and then she said, listen, Elaine, this is your advantage. It's your privilege. You go and tell them. I think Elizabeth, that's such a cool subtle move. Instead of saying, you know, you're so bolts and nuts, this is what we're going to do, tell her no. Listen, you go tell them, it's your advantage, you know.
It's true. Elizabeth is like underratedly great.
Yeah, that's very good. I do agree. I think she's a bit underrated. She did the right thing, went to, you know, to key allies, you know, that stopped them from, you know, Missy and Aaron, you know, jumping ship. And it secured them a spot. It definitely paints a bit of a target on her back. But at the same time, I think it's a double-edged sword where she can, on the one side, her enemies are going to be like, you know, this girl's crafty. We didn't think she's strategic, but she pulled off a strategic move. You know, what else does she have in the arsenal? But she can very easily spin this to be her allies, be like, yo, guys, whatever it takes for us to get to the end, I'll get us there. And it's almost like a loyalty move, you know, saying, I'll do this for us, you know, and that always, you know, reciprocates well later in the game. I mean, you look at like in Millennials versus Gen X, when David played his idol,
Jessica,
yeah, exactly. And how much of goodwill it bought him. And it's like, listen, if you're with me, I'll take care of you. And I mean, he came fourth, almost won that season. So I think she can, you know, she did well. The one thing, like I mentioned earlier, I think the one, you know, she, on my scorecard, she got an 8.5 out of 10. I think she could have gotten, you know, 8+ if she went to one of those people, you know, and said, you know, whoever, let's say Lauren. I think Lauren is an easy one. She's also a girl. I don't know if she's in so tight with Dan and Jason. Say, Lauren, listen, it's not going to be you. Trust me. I don't want to tell you why, but just let me know you're safe. That whole thing. You know, if she brokered that trust with one of those people, it could have, you know, garnered her another ally in the next round if the subscribe goes to Trump, or in the next swap or merge. So I think she did well. She could have done slightly better, but I think Elizabeth did the right thing.
Yeah, I think that the fear is like, well, then can they prepare with an idol? But it's like they still don't know who you're targeting.
Exactly.
And, you know, like they ended up stealing Jason's vote, and then voting him out, which I actually thought was pretty good, because usually it's like now it's got to the point where you're like, well, if they're stealing their vote, it's too obvious. They're never going to vote that person out. So I actually feel like if they had an idol, they wouldn't have played it on Jason. And now it's got to the point where that person is so obviously staying that you can now vote them out. So that's like a cool place we've got to in Modern Survivor. But I think that Elaine is like unfortunate for her. That from the viewer's perspective and from Lyra's perspective, it seemed like she saved herself. And now we know she saved Aaron. Like, they should be more indebted to her than they know to be. Because she really did, you know, save them. And she was going to be okay. Jason said that they were going to have, you know, to vote out Aaron, have Missy vote against her, and then kind of bring in Elaine and Elizabeth, who would have been a little bit alone. So she was fine, actually, in this episode, and actually really saved Aaron. So he doesn't know how much he needs to be thanking her right now. But I thought that she obviously used it well, because once she got the vote block, it wasn't set in stone that her side was going to win. She had to keep Aaron with her, who seemed really keen to flip. Missy seemed a little keen to flip regardless. Elizabeth, it seemed, only really was very scared of the rocks and was very much with Elaine, which makes sense because they seem really close. But she kept them all on side. She obviously told everyone in a really good way at a really good time to keep Lyra with her. So I commend that. Where I would duck her points now that we're just like giving people really picky 8.5s out of 10s is just that like her read on the 4 against 4 was off. Like, she really thought, I think, that they were going to go to rocks for, you know, and they weren't. I really don't think they were going to rocks. So
yeah, I don't think they would have. They didn't have the coup to go that route. Elizabeth, she was visibly scared to go to rocks.
So that's not great, because like a lot of her confessionals were in direct juxtaposition of someone else being like, I'm never going to rocks, and Elaine would be like, we're all going to go in together like tribe strong, cut to someone saying we're not, you know, and that's not a great look. But besides that, she did really well.
I agree with everything you said. I think one thing, I don't know if it's once again, I don't want to, you know, look into the crystal ball too far, but I think Elaine has now put herself in a very good spot, like I said. But I think if this tribe loses again, you know, she might have put herself up to, you know, okay, she saved us now. She's not going to do it a second time. And I would say, quote unquote, wrote somebody like Elaine off and say, she's a goofball. But now she's shown some strategic prowess. Where if I lose again, I'm very scared for Elaine.
I
hope she stays.
Because I feel like for Elaine, like, she wasn't talking much with Vokai. So they can't be very mad at her for doing this, even though they were targeting Aaron. But their relationships were with Missy and Aaron, so they seem most betrayed by them. So they could go to Elizabeth and Elaine and say, Missy and Aaron came to us from the beginning and try to turn on you. We should work together. Like, I think that she now has, at least in this iteration of where they are in the swap, some strategic options that someone like an Aaron and even like a Missy to a degree really don't have. They seem to have really blamed Aaron. I think they would try to work with Elaine, and I think that if old Vokai is going to try vote anyone out, it would be Aaron or Missy. Whether they get that done or not, probably not. But I feel like Elaine would actually be able to make that choice more than Missy or Aaron would be able to vote her out.
Yeah, I do agree. I think you're right.
But I want to talk about Island of the Idols itself, which was a little funny. It was like Boston Rob and Sandra were like, your task is to be really daring. Can you, you know, tell us if you're going to do it before the bottle runs out? And she's like, okay. And they're like, whoa. Way too flame. Not that daring, okay? There's like a level of daringness that we needed you to be at, and you were like way too forthcoming, which was like, oh my god, the level that Boston Rob is trolling these contestants is like really unfortunate at this point.
Luke, can I weigh in on the Island of Idols just from a holistic view?
Yes.
You know, season wise, I think it was clear from one of the preseason things that Jeff said is it sounded like they want Boston Rob to, you know, set up shop and then everybody can come and buy something and then, you know, they can haggle for half an hour on, you know, what's the adequate buy price? What's the market value of what we have here? And that's not working out for them so well. Not yet. I hope somehow production tells them, listen, you can actually try and wheel and deal with this guy.
But you definitely no one knows to do that.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, that's I think the objective they have. From a production point of view, and it's not really working so well. But that being said, I want a lot of people on social media, they're like, or on Twitter and Instagram, maybe they say, no, these contestants, they just want to take risk. You know, they're not thinking things through and all of this, yada, yada. I mean, let's say, and I want to challenge those people to take a step back and imagine you actually, because all those people who are Mike Invest comments apply year in, year out to be on the show. I mean, nobody watches the show and doesn't want to be on it. Well, very few.
I don't want to be on
if it. You, everybody except Shannon who watches the show wants to be on. Well, everybody except Shannon and Mike. Mike also said he's, he doesn't want to do it.
That's why we get along.
Yeah. But you dream of this game your whole life, right? And if you get to the Island of the Idols, right, you get there, these like Survivor gods are there. I mean, they've got statues built to them. It's like the Mount Rushmore of Survivor. I mean, Boss drops Sandra's there and they say, hey, listen, there's a chance you want to play. I mean, if you want to go and do Survivor, why would you at that point in time say, I waited my whole life for this opportunity? No, sorry, I'm going to sit this out and just, you know, eat watermelon with you and climb on the boat and go back. People are like, no, this is my one adventure. I'm not going to get a second chance at this. Most likely, I'm not going to play again. This is my one shot. I am here. Let's go. Let's see what happens. Unless you're in a really, really difficult spot, or you really, the risk is not worth the reward to what we saw, like when what Kellen did in Ghost Island, which said, you know, I don't know what's in this urn. I don't want to take the risk. I'll keep my vote because I'm going to need it. Unless you are clear cut on what is happening and what the repercussions are, I do not see anybody who's a fan of a show not playing or taking up a challenge. Very few people like don't want idols or don't want advantages or don't play the game. So I think before these people just troll the contestants online, take a step back and think, what would you have done in that situation if you had no knowledge of the whole show? You would have said, I want to play, so let these guys play the game.
I don't think that everyone would necessarily want an idol advantage. Like, you're the type of player who works with that, and that's the type of gameplay that you have. So for you, I get it. Some people are not that archetype, and that's not their thing.
Sure, sure.
And, you know, but, like, I think I'm starting to turn around on it and kind of realizing, because a lot of people have pointed out that when Nora went to Island of the Idols, the four people that they showed saying, I would never want to go to the Island of the Idols, were these four Vokai members who've now been, like, out-mechanismed and have lost the vote. So was that foreshadowing by the editors? If so, that's very ingrained, very, very detailed. But if so, then the show's message is, you should always go to Island of the Idols, right? And for me, when I'm standing back and I'm looking at it as a really social game, I'm like, Island of the Idols was a terrible thing. You had to lie to your tribe. You painted a target on your back. You were outcast from the tribe. You know, you were ostracized from them for a day or so. I would say, don't go. But now I'm turning around on it and, like, looking at this, what's happened to Jason, and thinking, if he had a vote blocker, if he had an idol, if he had the opportunity to get it, he would be okay. Like, I think the way that modern US Survivor works is probably go, like, probably take the risk. Like, it's a very big risk-taking type of game, and you probably do need a mechanism, because if you don't go and get it, someone else will get it, and that'll be the thing that decides your fate. Like, in Australian Survivor, I would say definitely don't go. That's the kind of game that really doesn't reward mechanisms. That's not what you need. Like, be more social, stay with the tribe. But for US Survivor, I don't agree with it. It's not everything I would want to see. Like, when I look at it as a social game, it's not really what I want to see. But I do think, like, I think now go. I think that's the point that we're at, where the chance of an advantage or idol probably is more relevant to you than that 24 hours bonding with your tribe and not putting a target on your back.
Look, you make a very good point, Shannon. One thing I want to add on to what you said is, you said if you don't get it, somebody else is going to get it. And I do agree with that. It's very similar to links with my original point I said in the beginning of this podcast. If you're at the top, you want to create order. And if you're at the bottom, you want to create chaos. And getting the advantage is for your tribe or your team or your alliance, whatever you want to call it, voting block. That creates order because you now know where the information is. But at the same time, if things go south and you need to now, you know, start playing from bottom, whatever you have, you can leverage it and start, you know, sowing division and chaos with whatever you got. You know, play it off as a fake idol or whatever it is. You know, lie about you did, similar to what Rob did in our season. So the advantage you have with going and getting whatever the artifact or the thing is that Rob's handing out, I mean, you can just, it gives you information. You can leverage it in so many ways. You have to do it. I cannot really see an opportunity where you don't go for those reasons.
I think I've changed my mind on it. I think that is true, because as I've said on previous podcasts, like, the only thing that all of the recent winners have in common is that they had an idol and advantage. That is the winning formula. You can't even say that they were in the game the whole time. If you're looking at Chris Underwood, you can't even say that they had, you know, long-term allies. Like, Ben was completely by himself. Mike Holloway, like, all they had was
Adam was on the outs all the time.
It's true. And like they were all largely saved by these things. And now I think like you do have to go and get it because it is the most important thing in the modern US game. And it's worth the risk. And as you say, like if you're at the top, then maybe you can use it to kind of secure those numbers. If you're at the bottom, if Vince had played his idol, he obviously would have been saved. So you do need obviously a read and social awareness to use these things. But you know, if you kind of need some tricks in your bag. You need a bag of tricks at this point in modern US Survivor, and you have to take the risk to play like that. In South Africa, it's probably more of a medium level game. It's probably not as extreme as that, but it's not as far the other side as Australian Survivor is, where it's like, definitely don't lose that social capital. So I do think it's at that point. But for Elaine, she should have jumped at it. I mean, I know she probably could have listened to hear out the task. Because if you looked at the bottle, like, because the bottle was kind of jumped
it was like,
it really was like, she completely jumped at it immediately. But like, I get it. She should have. She was on the bottom. Her four were not in a good spot. They were going to be flipping. You know, she was out. She needed something. Like, she needed, even if it was that terrible caller task, for her, I would have been taking it because she really was like, she needed a savior. She was, you know, we know she wasn't going to be going, but her or her side or Lyra were in a very, very bad spot, and it was worth the risk. So I think she was right to jump at it.
Exactly. I think, she could have maybe just fished out a bit more what it
she
is.
She could have
like,
heard a little
in
bit
the back
more,
of her mind, like, have a yes word, like, loaded into the gun. And when it's like 5 cent call, say yes. Just find out a bit more before you just jump in.
A little bit more. Just in case it's like,
just in case
making
you take
against
the
Boston Rob.
You can't take the merch.
Yeah. Just in case it's like you're going to, you vote yourself out. Like, anything. Like, just find out.
Exactly.
But I do think that, like, she pretty much was going to have to take, like, 99% of tasks, because what else was she going to do? Go back to that 4-4 where they have no leverage and go to Rocks? Rocks is best case scenario for them at that point. So she needed something. So I was impressed by that. But I wanted to ask you as well, from a production standpoint, you know, seeing this where the tribe sat her out, so she got sent there, and then this was, like, did you like all of that?
Look, this is something I also see a lot of people are complaining about, saying this challenge is arbitrary because whoever you sat out got the advantage. So, you know, they say Dan, Jason, and co. couldn't have prepared for this because they didn't know what's going to happen. But just as arbitrary as it is sitting out a teammate, it's the same arbitrary number you have of drawing a rock. It's a 1 in 6 or 1 in 8 shot.
But you make the choice to draw a rock. You know what you're doing in that sense. This was they just sat her out of a challenge, and then she was on her way to Island of the Idols.
Yeah, but let's understand. For me, if it's let's say those are the only options. The one is a random chance of whoever draws the wrong rock goes home, versus a random chance whoever sits out gets an advantage and can use that to leverage himself. I would go for the second one. Both come down to randomness. But this way, we at least see some people get an advantage or use that to broker it, and how they still have to play the game with the bit of randomness, where drawing a rock is just, you know, randomness and then it ends. You might as well roll the dice at the beginning of the season. So if it's within a random parameter, I would prefer it being a random way to choose a person than just drawing a rock and sending somebody home. I know people are on the fence about this. I'm not saying I'm right. For me, that's just... Between those two options, I would say let the random factor at least give us some gameplay versus just, you know, luck of drawing and go.
But I don't think, I've never seen drawing rocks as that random. Like, of course it's random that you pick it, but, you know, every single person has made that extremely risky choice to draw rocks.
Yes,
so that for
me
is gameplay. That's a decision every single person has made. Whereas this is production.
Sure.
I think that's why I didn't like it, was like, production, you know, they sat her out. They didn't know anything about it. They sat her out, which to me is kind of meaningless. I know some people have said, well, like, sometimes people don't get picked at the merge phase, like PK in Survivor South Africa or Michaela in Survivor Game Changers, and they get a reward.
Yeah.
For me, that's quite personal when you, like, are picking teams for a reward. I want to ask you from a player perspective, but is it, like, insulting to sit someone out of a reward challenge? Like, they're still going to get the reward. They're on the tribe. They definitely have to play in immunity, which is more important. Like, is this a personal thing where, like, can you feed it into the narrative of, like, well, they always underestimate her, or was she just, like, sat out for this tribe, and that's, like, a pretty meaningless thing?
Look, I think you asked a couple of things now. I have to answer one at a time. Firstly, in terms of sitting out, so this was a reward challenge. So they valued her above somebody else who they wanted to sit out that immunity challenge, which was Lauren, if I'm not mistaken. So that means they don't I don't think Elaine is that bad a challenger. She's like the second worst in the tribe, right?
She's the only person who 100% has to play the immunity challenge, and they trust her to do that. So
Exactly. So it was an interesting choice where, you know, they don't view her as, you know, the physically or whatever challenge metric is weakest person. Sitting out, I think this is, I know somebody like Dante in our season, he was very adamant that he played in every single challenge and, you know, he played the game and he doesn't back down from a challenge. For me, I know myself very well. I know what challenges I can do and what I couldn't do. So I was very, very vocal, not very vocal, but I was very much down to say, listen, if this is going to be a brawling in the water kind of challenge, we've got Kerbis, Dante, Felix, I'll just sit this one out, guys. It's no biggie. It's not my strong suit. And then when we had the one where we had to hold our breath underwater, I mean, I know I'm going up. I thought Dante was going to win that one because, you know, he's a scuba dive instructor. So I'm like, I'm going to sit this one out to get some food. I mean, for me, it's stupid saying I want to play because you think it's lame to sit out because, you know, you devalue yourself. You didn't compete. But I mean, if you have a 0% chance of winning and 100% chance of getting food, if you look at it from that point, I'm like, well, I'll sit out and have some food. So I know some people view it as very almost like embarrassing or a knock on your game if you sit out. I don't, to be honest. And sometimes even though people have rested players, let's say somebody gets injured or they've got an upset stomach, say, listen, it's not a vital one. We need you in the immunity, you know, just chill this one out and come back tomorrow when you're stronger.
I mean, I don't have the kind of mindset a survivor player would have as someone who doesn't want to play. But for me, being sat out of a reward challenge, but you would still get the tribal reward is like best case scenario. So you didn't have to do anything and you would still get the reward.
That happened to me when we had the pizza reward. We didn't set out. I think if it went to round five, if I'm not mistaken, I would have had to compete in the final round. I think me and Jeffrey were the only two who didn't compete. But we closed it out in three rounds and then, you know, joined in the pizza. So even though I didn't compete, you know, I joined in the spoils. That happens also in Survivor. I mean, that's part of a game. It is what it is.
Yeah. And for like PK and Michaela, I could see how not being picked for a tribe, you know, for a team to play in a reward and not getting that reward would be demoralizing. I just don't think that this is like this. I don't think this means anything. I think it's completely random. And then I feel for production of sending her to Island of the Idols and, you know, not based on anything. It's not like they have to vote for someone to go to Island of the Idols, and they know it's a 4-4, and they know she's either going to lose her vote. I mean, 99% when she takes the challenge, which they all are. So she's either going to lose her vote or get a vote block. So they know that they're breaking this 4-4 either way with this advantage. I think that's my issue with it. It's just like, it's very controlled. I can see production's arm all the way through that. And it's also kind of uninteresting to me. I mean, this was maintained in its interest because Aaron's choice gave it some like social and strategic weight, which I found really interesting. But if it was just, there was no chance that anyone from Lyra was going to flip at that point, and Elaine just had a random free shot, that's not that interesting to me. Like, yeah, she got an advantage. She was randomly sent there. It's like pretty random. Doesn't feel like hugely earned. It was only that Aaron was flipping back and forth that kept this really tense for me. But I mean, the other ways that this 4-4 were going to be decided were either rocks, or people flipping on their alliance, or this cool plurality thing that Vokai were trying to pull off. And I feel like all those things are way more organic and way more interesting than just someone getting an advantage at random and being like, we win. Like, we found this random thing, and now we just won the type 4-4, and production had a big hand in that. It's just, I mean, I'm going on about it probably too much, but it was just like a little bit too production controlled for me.
Yeah, I can see where you come from. I want to just play devil's advocate just for the sake of this podcast. We saw Vince going. He got an advantage, which was an idol, which was, you know, usable in two tribals. And obviously Vince and Elaine's scenarios are different, but the Elaine came back and said, guys, this is what we have. This is what we're going to do. You know, like she said, I'm going to be on my white horse, you know, riding down and let's you know, win the SWAT tribe. What Vince could have taken his idol, come back and say, yo guys, this is what I have. It's an idol that's good for two rounds. Okay. So I can play it tonight. Probably he's going to get a note, or I don't know if they get notes. Let's say they don't get a note. He says, it's valid for two tribals. Either you guys tell me, I play it tonight, we don't have it. Or if it's a swap, we keep it. And then the next time, if we go to, you know, we're down in the numbers, let's use this to save, you know, one of our own, you know, give us some leverage in the swap. Be open about what he got. It's obvious, clear that they're not allowed to talk about, you know, what's happening at the Island of the Idols, but whatever advantage you have, you can do with that you want. And Vince got the choice. He didn't say anything. He wanted to, I don't know why he wanted a two-round idol to keep it a secret. Elaine got it and she was open to alliance. Now, like I said, I know that the scenario is different, but even though this randomness in what happened, you know, the way they both got chosen, they both got random advantages, Vince didn't play it as well as Elaine did. And I think that's what, even though it's random, we get different players using different ways. And that still gives us, like you say, organic results and character moments that still keeps the show entertaining.
Yeah, but for me, like, the idol and the vote block are almost like polar opposite advantages. Like, the idol is much more powerful. It's much less situational. You can use it in a number of different ways. It's way more dynamic, but you also have to, like, have a better read to know how to use it, which Vince didn't have. Whereas, like, the vote block, you know, there's no way that Elaine could have used it wrong. Like, all she had to do was block a vote. If she had an idol and she had to save one of her four and then read who they were coming for, there would have been a lot of strategic skill to that. This was just block someone's vote. It's a worse advantage because it's way more situational. I said on the podcast 2 weeks ago, like, the vote block is nothing.
It's very bad, except for this scenario.
For this one scenario and the Davids. Like I said, like, it's never been relevant, and then, like, 2 weeks later it was. So in this situation, it was relevant. But when it's relevant, it's, like, all-powerful. There's nothing you can do to counteract it. There's really nothing Vokai could have really done. And it's not hard to use. She just had to block one person, where an idol, you have to read who are they voting for. It's more difficult, which is good, because there's usually more payoff and there's greater situations where you can use it. So, I mean, how could she have used this wrong? It's not possible, really.
I hear what you're saying, but at the same token, nothing stops one of them from still flipping and voting Elaine out.
And that is on her. So that completely is
they,
on her.
They
but,
could
but
still, they could
gave
still
them a helping flipped. Hand.
Sure. But, I mean, anybody of those eight people at the trial, well, except for Jason, anybody of seven could have flipped their vote. Mm-hmm. Anybody of seven could have jump shipped to the other side. Even when she played it, they could, Tommy and Co could have said, okay, guys, well, if it's happened, you know, we'll vote with Lucy. What are we going to do? You know, they just stuck to the guns and hope for the best. Oh, they thought Aaron was with them. But that's Aaron outplaying them. So we can sit and argue about, you know, whether it's good survival or bad. I still think that this isn't a win the game device. It's not a super idol. It doesn't give you two or three rounds. I think all the people involved played it well, and that was fun to see.
It's not super powerful, except in this episode.
But
production knew that they were sending someone from this tribe to get this advantage or to lose their vote. That's what I'm saying. Just from production's point of view, it's not like this, that she got it before the swap and it ended up being so, you know, they ended up being swapped 4-4 and it was so relevant. Like, production just knew that this is exactly what was going to happen. I think that's what makes me feel a little icky about it. Like, if you know, anyone can go find an idol out in the jungle and use it whenever they want. That's a little bit more broad. This was just very much like production could see the you know, the cards and the dominoes falling as they would, and I feel like that's a little bit too controlled.
Yeah, I can give you the player perspective. I think if you want to really go down the rabbit hole, get Leroux in 2 weeks' time. Ask him, does he think that was planned, or do you think they swapped it out last minute, knowing which tribe got?
I'm not sure it was planned. I just feel he will give you
a breakdown of how big an influence production
is. I'm not even saying that it's planned. I just feel like maybe, you know, when you have these weekly advantages and when production is choosing which tribe goes and all this stuff, and it's just like a little bit too much control over what's happening. I just think in general, I'm not even saying that they swap something out to help Lyro, or I just think that the mechanism of Island of the Idols, where Rob and Sandra control a lot of Faith and production control Rob and Sandra, gives them a lot of control, and I can just see it happening, and I don't really like to see production on screen. Yeah. So, but like, what is your opinion on Vokai at that tribal council? Because I know they've gotten a lot of flack for being super emotional. Tommy, Dested, Aaron, you know, again, I think that's a little crazy because he literally was planning on voting him out. But Lauren is crying. It was emotional what they were going through, thinking they had all the power and then having it be this, again, like almost impossible to counteract thing unless they could convince Missy and Aaron to come to their side when they had power as Lyro for pretty much the first time in the game. That's a hard ask. So there wasn't a lot that they could do. And they were emotional about it. Did you take umbrage with that?
Shannon, I wonder how it feels like if people are coming through your tribal and, you know, somehow you save yourself and then afterwards they're angry with you.
Who would know what that would be like?
I wouldn't know. No, I think it's obviously, like you said, this came out of the Exit Press, but I don't think these people can be too hypocritical saying, oh, we want to take out Aaron. Now he saved himself. Now we're angry with him. I mean, if Aaron is saving his own skin, then, you know, kudos to him. You can't be angry with somebody playing for Survivor. So I don't see Aaron being in the wrong. You know, he did what he had to do. Maybe he could have done it better.
Yeah, he should have done it better for him. But, like, he didn't owe them anything. They were literally trying to vote him out.
No. Exactly. So let's say, Tom, if you win a pick, you're going to say, oh, Aaron is such a douchebag. You know, did X, Y, and Z. But if you're Aaron, you're like, I saved myself. If I was on the chopping block, and if you're an Aaron fan, you're going to be like, this guy did it to stay in the game. So, I mean, obviously, Survivor, it's different. It's, you know, it's not like it's a court and, you know, you need ground for dismissal, you know, within the laws. Like, no, Survivor's a free for all. And if you survive and you stay, then, you know, great. You can go play again tomorrow.
Yeah, I just feel bad for Vokai because I feel like they were pretty much perfect here. Besides having this advantage and not being able to convince Missy and Aaron across from, you know, a winning position when they've been down the whole time. Like, they did plan around Island of the Idols. They weren't planning on going for Elaine or Elizabeth. You know, I feel like their plan was really good.
Yeah, and how funny was it scene where they walk up to Elizabeth and Missy and they're like, does Elaine have something? And they're both saying,
yeah,
no, and then they just stand there for 6 seconds, like, okay, this is the poker face I practiced, and they don't flinch. It was such an hilarious moment. And great job once again to the editors, to showing us that instead of just, you know, giving us, you know, it's a bit of a show, don't tell, you know, zoom in on those faces, give us the expressions. I think it was a brilliant moment.
Yeah, but I feel bad for Vokai. Like, they're getting hate for being emotional, but I also get it, and I love when Survivor players are emotional because it's not chess, and if it were chess, we wouldn't be 20 years into it with multiple international editions. Like, these are human beings playing this really, like, emotionally wrecking game and trying to be strategic within it. I feel like, you had a tweet during your season, didn't you, about people coming at you for being too game body and then for being too emotional, and it's like, maybe, you know what, maybe the fans can never be pleased.
Exactly, and I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head. A lot of people say, oh, you know, this guy, why is he crying about this or that? And we're like, well, you know, he's a human and he's
and
got
like the
feelings.
Worst.
And exactly. And you're just so stretch your limit. So, I mean, think back of Kakian, that first, I think it was a tribal council after the merge, when Cass flipped and Tony and everybody was cheering and shouting, mm-hmm. you know, when they, people get emotional, you get riled up at tribal, and the inverse happened, just as super stoked as you get when your plan works out. So demoralizing and depressing it is when, you know, you thought you were running the show, and then there's literally the whole, you know, your alliance scrambles in front of you, somebody there goes walking out, and you have to sit there and be like, you know, WTF, I can't believe what I just saw, what just happened. And it's a gut-wrenching feeling. So you can't fault people for getting emotional when, you know, things don't go the way they thought it would. They're normal humans, and nobody's a professional Survivor player. You're just a Joe, nobody from the street, going to play this game, and if you don't tick all the boxes and you don't play a perfect game, that's fine. You're just a guy who, you know, experience normal emotions. And like you said, that's why it's so still on 20 years later, because we get these real human emotions, and that's why it's such a cool show.
Yeah, and the fear as well, because they knew that if they couldn't get Aaron and Missy to flip, it was going to be any one of them, and they had no control in that. They had no idea who it would be. Like, they were just waiting there, I guess, just in absolute fear, knowing that it was basically just random chance at whoever was going to be picked. And as they said, there was good reasons for all of them. They literally gave, I really love that sequence where they gave a reason for all of them. And it really could have equally probably been any of them. And it was like a game of inches. So that must have been terrifying. Like, I know that some people were happy that because they'd been pretty cocky and been pretty dismissive of Elaine, they were happy that they'd kind of been like brought back down to earth. But like, you know, they were snarky about Elaine, but saying that they didn't think that she was smart enough to have an idol, but they did still plan for her having an idol, but not voting for her. So I think they kind of had it on lock. And then this was just like this unforeseeable, unbeatable advantage. And unfortunately, I don't think that they can really wear that. It's not on them.
Exactly. And nobody in the world loves people saying how comfortable and how cocky they are and how they're running the show, and then getting them, you know, flustered and knocked out of a game like the Survivor editors. They just love doing that. So
yeah, everyone has those confessionals.
Everyone has those confessionals, and every season you see it, and every time you have that feeling of, you know, you want to be comfortable. That's what you get for being arrogant. There you go. Cheers. Yeah.
But you can see why they were feeling secure. Like, they should have been a little bit cocky about it. Like, they were in a good spot.
I can ask, yeah. Like, I can understand how, but why they are comfortable. But once again, it's how you say it, not what you say it, that matters in Survivor.
Yeah, and you know, I want to talk about Jason and kind of get your thoughts on it, because you're in a similar archetype, like the strategic looking, you know, strategy game bot kind of archetype, right? And you know, he said that in his exit interviews they were calling him Fishback, and he got like the Fishback archetype put onto him, and that made him really, really threatening. Like, even when they were telling about the four of them who should be voted out, it was like, Tommy is such a huge threat, but Jason is really smart. Like, it's just like kind of like who he is as a person, which is like, I like really hard to combat. Did you see any similarities there between him and you?
Yeah, look, definitely. I don't want to go too deep into stuff like, you know, archetypes and editing and, you know, all the gears of the engine of Survivor. But you always have to, when you get on the island and you see somebody, you have to almost ask yourself, why would LaRue or Matt and Wagner or Jeff put this guy on the show? You know, there's a reason. It's very easy to understand why they put Nora on the show, you know, because she's eccentric and she does all these quirky things. So you know that, right? It's very easy to see how a guy like Tom or Aaron's on the show. You know, Tom's this NHL player, Aaron's this big guy, runs a gym. So you can understand why he's on the show. And people know that, you know, they know what to look for, why he's on the show. And if you see somebody, you know, he's not that big, he's not that, you know, the physical player, but, you know, you can, I don't know if you told them about what his job is, but you find out, okay, this guy's smart, he's intelligent, you immediately think, okay, this guy is here because he knows the game, you know. And I think in the US Survivor, I think saying goodbye as a super fan, I almost want to say that's out the window nowadays. Everybody's a fan, except for maybe like two or three recruits, but half of a cast, you know how the game works and listen to these podcasts and so forth. So it's a difference between being a super fan and being highly analytical. And I think that a lot of people, it scares people, because it's like you want to compete with them in your arena in a way that you can beat them. If you think of somebody like in our season, like Steffi, you know, Steffi loves competing and getting physical. And if she cannot match on that level, you become a threat to her because she's like, I don't know what to do now. So I mean, she just wants to go after you. And I can understand why people were scared of a guy like Jason, because, you know, you get to the end, maybe it's an endurance challenge, you can win him, but if he's going to smash you in a puzzle, you know, you want to even your odds. So, you know, get rid of a guy. So it sucks that Survivor's got to this point where, you know, Christian Ubiki and you know, Steven and Rob and all those people have dominated in this archetype and always made it deep into the game, because it's now, you know, you don't come in, you didn't come in as Jason, you came in as, you know, even Fishback lookalike. And that's a very difficult tag to get off your shoulder.
He didn't even look like Fishback. I don't even know why. Like, he looked much more like,
yeah,
Rob.
I saw people like, he's like, if Rob and Fishback had a kid, that would be like the difference between them. I'm like, what? It just looks like Jason.
It just looks like a person who's from Long Island and who's a strategy.
Exactly.
Like, it's pretty broad, but yeah, I mean,
he looks nerdy, but I wouldn't say he looks like Steven or Rob, no.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you know, I thought that I was impressed that he got voted out as a threat, because considering where he came from and having been like the person on the bottom, he like, I think like in the background, I gave him a choosy point last time because he was like subtly reintegrating from that really low point. And now, they, you know, Lyra must not have seen him as any different to the other three, because then if they felt he was lesser than any of the other three in the Vokai tribe dynamics, they would never have gone for him. So he must have really been like completely integrated into his alt tribe at that point. So that's impressive. That reminded me of you too. Like, you came from the Ting Ting vote, which I have to mention on this podcast, and
yeah,
you were on the outs,
sure,
and you integrated with some different people and, you know, formed those bonds kind of like more in the background. Like, that's the kind of thing that's not flashy, that's not going to get like a ton of edit credit, but at the same time, is really impressive. And you kind of see it happening in the background, and it's like, that's the meat and potatoes of the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's who was the guy in Ghost Island? Who was also this archetype, if you want to call it that.
Bradley?
He was sent to Island, Ghost Island first or second.
Jacob Derwin. Yeah.
Jacob Derwin. You could have a start like Jacob or me and Jason, and then either you bounce back or, you know, it sinks your game. And I think Jason did well, like you said, to get back to his point. I think if, you know, things played out different, maybe other tribe went to tribal council, I could see him actually being just low-key enough to make it into the game. And then you get into that position where you're like, wait, there's seven people left and Jason is still here. And if he's got a couple of tricks by then, it might have been too late. We will never know.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the other tribe now. We spent over an hour talking about Vokai, and let's talk about Lyro. There was a lot going on. I felt like Jamal was really just the star. Obviously, he has that scene with Jack, which we'll have to talk about. But even at the beginning, the way that, you know, Dean is desperate, he has the choice to go with Nora, who's come to him. And he goes back to Jamal, and he's planned, you know, to have that relationship with him. He obviously has a good relationship with him. I felt like this whole tribe dynamic was centered around Jamal in this episode.
Yes, I think Jamal is definitely, you know, he came off in the... Was it the second vote when he lost Molly. And I think he's done well to almost be from the guy who got blindsided in his first tribal council to now be, you know, almost one of the main protagonists of the season. I think his bounce back was very good. He's found the idol. That's also helping him. I love Jamal's whole demeanor. He's cool as a cucumber, you know. He's so articulate in the way he speaks. I think he's one of those people where you always know where you stand with him. And I think he Jack and him, we mentioned this earlier. I think they still have a long way to go in the season. And I'm very excited to see Jamal's game play out because, you know, he's an idol in the hands of somebody like Jason or you know, Elaine, you know, they're going to be erratic and do some crazy antics with it. I'm curious to see how a guy who's a bit more reserved, a bit more calculated, a bit more laid back, you know, moving at a bit of a slower pace, how he's going to, you know, use that late in the game. Definitely excited to see Jamal's game going forward.
Yeah, because as you said, cool as a cucumber. And like the way with the Jack scene, like the amount of patience that he had, like he's been blindsided in this game. He obviously has had now this incident happen. He's been kind of on the outs, but he kind of like channels that emotion in this kind of like really meditative way. He found an idol with it. And here he like used this incident with Jack to really kind of strengthen their relationship, to teach him and us some important things, like as an audience, just like that calmness and that really, you know, that almost centered quality in him, I think allows him to deal with negative situations in a really positive way. And it's the kind of thing where I want to see what other adversity he faces going forward in the season, because I feel like he has a good approach to it. I know that he was, you know, not happy when Molly got voted out and stuff, but I think even as the game goes on, I'm seeing more and more just like that calmness under pressure or within negative situations, which can be crucial for a Survivor player.
No, for sure. That's a test. You need to send some of your island secrets. Lose an ally in the first round. I mean, see how you handle it. Look, with the old Jack Jamal thing, whenever something like that happens in the show, you hit the crossroad. And I mentioned this online as well. You can either choose the road that is easy or the road that is right. If you want to pull an Albus Dumbledore quote here. It's very easy to then go and break down and say, oh, you know, make this a whole incident about race or privilege or, you know, blow it out of proportion. Or you can say, okay, it happened. What can we learn from this? What's the takeaway? And Jamal's way of handling it was brilliant, saying, I'm going to take a step back. I don't want to speak to you right now. Just give me a couple of moments to gather my thoughts. You know, probably went for a walk, you know, had a bit of time to gather his thoughts. Come back and say, okay, listen, let's chat. And Jack as well. I mean, Jack could easily have, you know, obviously Jack was, it's like quote unquote wrong, yeah? But Jack could easily have been like, oh, made a scene of it. But he was like, please teach me. I want to learn. Mm-hmm. And that's something which doesn't make a lot of screen time. But if you speak to almost any Survivor player, they'll tell you let's take you, Shannon, you studied journalism. Am I correct? Right? You studied journalism. You had a journalist major, right? Okay. So most likely the people in your life would be people who grew up in your neighborhood or around you or studied journalism at the same university you did. That's more or less like 90% of your life. Where let's say I work in a workshop, my dad owns a mechanic workshop, and I work in the workshop on weekends, and I do that directly after school. Most of my life would be people who work in the automotive industry or in workshops or, you know, parts suppliers. That would be my world. And we as humans don't move out of our worlds very easily. And what Survivor is brilliant is it puts you together. And this cliche of Jeff saying people from different walks of life, but we had so many conversations about this, and I promise you, these guys are having them behind, you know, that doesn't make the edit because it's not great TV. But I remember I had a conversation with Ting Ting, and I jokingly said, you know, Ting Ting, you know, she's mentioned he has a boyfriend, and I'm like, you know, I'm assuming it's an Asian guy. And she laughed and she's like, yeah, her mom wouldn't approve if she doesn't, you know, date an Asian guy. And I say, wait, what? Are you joking? For real? It's not for real. She has to date an Asian guy. That's like, that's in their culture, a big thing. Later on with like Sipay and Felix, you know, when we slaughtered the chicken, I said, wow, Sipay, how do you know to do this? She's like, listen, this is what we do on Sundays. I'm like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. It's like, It's not like she doesn't have the money to come by to the shop. That's in her culture. That's how they do Sunday meal preparations. And it's so cool to learn these things from all these people. And, you know, seeing Jamal there teaching Kelly that whole dance. Kelly was fantastic when she danced with him, you know, all those moves. So Survivor is a very cool show where you get all these different people. And I think almost every person needs to have a Survivor moment in their life where they live on an island for 30 days with these people. And because you learn so much from different people and different cultures and races and gender, and it's such a great thing. And I'm glad that the show turned something that could slightly have been a negative into a very positive thing that tells the world, listen, there's beauty in this. If we don't go all political and make this, you know, an extremist argument, we say, let's do this constructively and let's be better as humans. I think production and the players, it's like 10 out of 10 for everybody involved.
Yeah, but in the hands of other people, this could have been really ugly. Like, I think just because both people in it were so, they were, I mean, pretty much perfect. Like, Jack was so actively contrite. Like, he was willing to learn to the utmost degree. He was so sorry, yeah. And he wasn't defensive, and he was open to that. So he was, like, the perfect perpetrator, basically. And Jamal, you know, still could have shunned that, and that would have been his prerogative, and he was hurt in that moment, but he chose to rise above it, which, again, he didn't have to do that. Like, he's the injured party here, but he did choose to do that and, you know, express it in that way and make it a really positive thing. Like, I think their relationship is now stronger. I think they're a really key relationship going forward. And as he said, it's a social game. So just to have that awareness of how far he can take it with Jack, to know their relationship, to know it'll be beneficial for it rather than severing one of Jamal's only real relationships in the game and his closest ally. Like, you have to be careful because it is a game and it's not just real life. And he just handled it so perfectly. And then obviously the show, you know, they knew they had a good moment on their hand. This wasn't going to be a bad thing. Like, obviously, they're going to show it because it's important, but also it makes the show look good because it was beautiful to watch and it was heartwarming. And they're going to show it in the best way. But I just love the way the show handled it because they gave Jamal room to speak on it and room to explain it. So that we as commentators don't have to come out. Like, I'm glad I don't have to come out and explain why this was wrong and explain anything about it, because I can't say it any better than Jamal did. He said it perfectly, and it's his lived experience, and he should say it. It's his narrative, and it's his world, and he did it perfectly, and the show gave him that space. So just, like, tick, tick, tick for, like, Jack, Jamal and production to take this moment and make it into what they did was just brilliant.
Definitely. It's one of those scenarios where you're sailing very close to the wind. And it's very easy for something like this to you know, spiral out of control. And we're going to talk about this at the finale. I mean, unless something drastic happens, it's going to be a finale moment. It's going to be cool. The crowd is going to applaud. You know, people are going to love Survivor. It's going to be a massive media thing. So I'm glad that the show needs more moments like this. Speaking as somebody who's been in a slightly similar, but very different situation. You want the show to have a constructive dialogue afterwards and not a negative or destructive one.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely, like, your moment wasn't handled with grace by the people who were doing it. And so it became ugly, which, you know, was its own thing, your viewing experience. That was extreme to watch. And this was kind of like the opposite of that. It was like an ugly moment where everyone kind of came to the party in a really positive way. Which was great to watch. But I was happy for Jamal as well, because he's on a tribe right now that is quite diverse, which is rare for Survivor. It's a pretty diverse season, and that's amazing, because in a different season where he's the only minority on that tribe, that's probably a lot harder. You know, when you look at, like, Karishma, for example, and, you know, she feels so culturally ostracized, and she, you know, again, it's a diverse cast, but she's the only Indian player ever, I think it is. Like, that's insane.
When I read that, I'm like, what? We're like almost 40 seasons in, and this is the first Indian girl. That's insane. But likewise. I mean, Karishma, she's got her own, you know, story. The whole what she's speaking about, you know, the bodies and having to cover it up on a show where everybody's, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, people walk around. These people, this is a separate issue, a separate conversation. These people are still walking around in their underwear. Why does Binox Production not give them bathing suits?
Because Tyler Perry told Jeff that he doesn't think that they should get their bathing suits, and now they don't get bathing suits anymore. That is true. I'm not joking.
I get that. I just don't understand why. I mean, why do you want people to walk around in their bras and their underwear? It's going off on a tangent here. Yeah. I digress. No, but yeah. So, and it's another person on the tribe speaking here, you know, about minorities. Another person who's really impressing me is Kelly. You must go back and watch that sequence where Jamal's dancing. And if I tell you, you know, Kelly is this, she's an intellectual, she's an MBA student, you would have in your mind almost this kind of, you know, sitting behind a desk, you know, businesswoman who's, you know, not really in with the people on the ground, if I kind of verbalize it like that. And she was dancing with Jamal and having a blast. And it's shows a lot about Kelly, where on the one hand, she can be, you know, intellectual, and you know, she has her idol, and she can play that way. But in the other way, she can be super casual with these people, and that is a very, very, very good skill set to have in Survivor, to be able to connect with every people, with every individual on whatever the language or the method they, you know, choose to be appreciated with. So I have very hopes for Kelly, and I'm highly impressed by her game and by that one sequence we have in this episode. It's very if you missed it, you missed it, but it's very impressive for me to watch that.
Yeah, I think Kelly's amazing. Like, she for me is one of the top people that I think are on the season. She has extreme winner potential. But it's interesting because she could kind of stand out like a sore thumb. As you said, she could be like, you know, the Harvard person who's kind of, you know, not in with the cool kids or anything like that. And she, I think, by way of her personality and her energy, has really integrated. And compare that to what we were saying about Karishma. You know, Karishma, I think it's like, it's so culturally different. Like, she's talking about basically having an arranged marriage. Like, that's extremely different. And that's hard to overcome. But, like, maybe with your mentality she can, but she can't. And I've been interested in the way that people have, like, responded to Karishma, especially last week. I mean, she wasn't really in the show this week. But it upset me that people were so hard on her for things that I think are trivial. And for that, I mean wiggling in the sand, and even how she's playing the game, or she's not active enough in strategy and stuff. It's like, look, I have a podcast about survival strategy, and I still think this is irrelevant. Like, this is, and that's why I want to ask you about it, because I think you were in a similar situation. I'm like, how is Karishma doing today as a human being? Like, she feels so ostracized. She's been so alone. How is she getting out of the shelter in the morning, let alone, like, being active enough in strategy? And the way that the audience has come at her, I think, has been heartbreaking to watch, because I think that sometimes we miss the forest for the trees on the fact that this is a human game. I know people did it for you, Jacques. I know even I was like, well, Jacques should have made this move and stuff, and I wasn't thinking about, having been through what you had been through on your season, what your minute to minute was looking like at that point, and about the humanity of it. And I think that we need to be doing that more with these contestants, with someone like Karishma, who is so isolated and feeling so down about it. Like, I need to know that she's okay before I'm like, and how are you doing strategically, you know?
Yeah, no. Look, one thing I want to say about Karishma, right? Let's just quickly open the docket and look at, you know, who's already out. I mean, we've lost Jason, who a lot of people would have picked. This one, I think it's, I don't know which side it is. I don't know if it's Inside Survivor, whatever. They've got this tribe competition. You can see which people chose which people for their fantasy tribe. You know, you can see, like, the ratings in terms of how, and that's always a good metric preseason to say, you know, what people's, you know, opinions are in terms of that individual winning. And a lot of people are really high on that list, are out of the game. I mean, Molly's out.
Chelsea.
Jason's out. Chelsea's out. I mean, and Karishma's still there. And you could also say, oh, people made the wrong moves, this or that. I get that. Maybe some people make the right moves, the wrong moves. But I think Karishma, a lot of people would have thought she would be an earlier boot. She's still there. She's maybe not, you know, in with all the people, but she's still there. And it's in a portion of a game where a lot of emphasis is placed on, you know, keep the tribe strong. We're going to go back to tribal council. Somehow she survived, and somehow she, I'm not exactly sure of a stat, but I think she's one of the people who's voted correctly the most times this season. So,
well, I feel like the other option was always Karishma. So she's voting for someone that they're probably going home.
So it's a default win. I get that. The stats do lie in this scenario. But yeah, and I think it just speaking from that perspective, I mean, seeing her cut open her hand, I told you in my deep dive when I had the one night where the doctor had to come and visit me and I was lying on the ground. There was one individual in the whole game who was like, listen, are you really okay? You sat with me. The other person diagnosed me with appendicitis and left. So it's very difficult when you're there because you are alone and you are scared. You know what's going on. And so I definitely understand why she's you know, verbalizing all of his feelings. At the same time, I do think Karishma is somebody who, if Karishma can somehow get to the end, right, and in a wacky way, she can pull in Nora. And maybe a goofy character like Dean or somebody. And Karishma can verbalize her story like she did to the camera about her life and how difficult it is for her. She's going to win in a 10-0 shutout easily.
Yeah, the problem is that she can probably only beat like Dean and Nora and the odds of her getting there with those two. And that's a maybe, but like that's the hard part when you can only beat two people in the game. Maybe.
I'm saying this now, but let's say look at somebody like, let's say, Ryan Ulrich from Triple H. I mean, a lot of people were pre-merge, like, this guy's going to win. And he got to the end, like, as the merge went on, his game just lost the traction that it had. And at the end, you know, people were like, sit next to him, now make it win him. That could happen to any of these characters. I mean, we can see, you know, give me a name. I'm looking at this list here. We can see Jack sliding and just being this something guy, not doing anything, not winning a challenge, and then be like, well, what did you really do? And I think then Karishma's story is more impressive than Jack's, and Karishma can win. So I don't think she's going to win, but I think if she can, you know, pull off that and get to the end with people that she can win, I think that would be also an amazing story to tell.
I mean, I think she has an amazing story as a character and potentially as a player. Like, it boggles my mind that she can come out and talk about her marriage and her cultural stuff. Like, that's captivating to me, and talk about how that makes her an outsider. And the takeaway is, oh, she should be strategizing harder. Like, that is huge. All that other stuff to me is like way more interesting. And in front of a jury, I would find that really captivating. It's like, look how on the outside I felt. For these cultural reasons, like, I started at a deficit and like, look how far I came. Like, I would see value in that as a juror, but I think where modern US Survivor is, like, there's not a lot of value in it because it ends up being, how many idols did you find? It's like more a game of numbers than like empathy and humanity often. You know, how many challenges did you win? Like, it's much more resume, I think. I know we often have the debate resume versus story, but I think the stories that they tend to want on the jury in US Survivor particularly are stories of finding idols. So, I mean, I don't have great hopes for her, but I'm kind of saying, like, I don't really like care how she does as a player right now. And I feel like I just want people to stop judging her as a person and kind of try to have a little bit of empathy about what her day is like right now in the game.
See, but that's also something that really, you know, ruffles my feathers when you look online. Like you mentioned now, saying she's not strategic enough. I mean, no two people in Survivor have played this game the same way. Some people, you know, go all in for just winning the challenges. Some people are all in about the strategic stuff. Some people are all in on the social things. So, if the strategy component is not Karishma's way to play the game, if her whole thing is maybe the social or whatever other metrics she uses.
But, like, she's doing her best. Like, she's doing her best from, like, the really hard spot that she's in, and I think that's just what we have to be recognizing.
Yeah, and then I get set up people like flaming her both for, you know, crying about her personal story and flaming her for she's not doing X, Y, and Z, which is your metric, you as the viewer, which you're imposing on the player, and because they're not playing by your metric, they're now bad. I don't understand. But I'm excited to see how it plays out. They wouldn't have shown that if it's not going to either, you know, be part of her arc or if you know, it's not relevant to the story. So I'm also interested to see, you know, what else we're going to get from Karishma going forward.
All right, Jacques. Well, I want to get to the chizzy. Was there anything else about this episode that you wanted to chat about before? Because I know you love the chizzy. We're going to give out some points, but was there anything else from this episode?
Chizzy, yes. My whole life, when I was on Survivor, I was like, I'm just going to get some chizzy points.
That's what I want to hear. No. That's all I want to hear.
we missed the start of the season, and that's Nora. Can we just take a minute and speak about this woman?
We did get a question from John Johnson who asks if you would rather play with Tanya or Nora. I feel like the comparisons are there.
Listen, they're one and the same. Nora and Tanya, they're the same person. They're both people who are financially well off. They're both people who, you know, are chasing rainbows in their personal life and on the game. How cool is a person like Nora on the show? Because you have, like, you mentioned this earlier, that moment where nobody wants to get in the boat because of, you know, the strategic repercussions. And Nora's just like, I'll go. She is insane. And then that whole bit of telling Dean, the guy who's, like, people have, I think LaRue said Dean is the Darrell of the season. Going to him and be like, yo, Dean, you want to come with me, we need to kill these people before they kill us. She is such a fantastic person to see on my TV screen. I love Nora. I hope she stays. I hope she makes it deep. I would not surprised if we see Nora at the end, but what's your opinion? I don't know if you've spoken, maybe you mentioned this in your previous podcast, but what's your opinion on a wild card like Nora in a season like this?
I mean, I really enjoyed her, especially in episode 4 with all the Island of the Idol stuff. I feel like at a point it could get a bit much for me. Tanya became normal at a point. I don't know if Nora's ever going to become normal, but I really appreciate her dynamic as it pertains to everyone around her. Like, I liked her and Jason's dynamic. I enjoy, like, watching the other players, you know, like, with the Island of the Idol stuff, try and deal with, like, the obstacle that is Nora. I find that really fun. I think it could become a lot. Like, the Debbie stuff, like, I feel like even as the Debbie expert, there were diminishing returns with that. But, you know, it's entertaining. Yeah. She's definitely, like, a breakout character.
Definitely. Yeah, and then one thing I want to mention about this Lyro, and I'm going to now, people are going to, after this, I have to go and check out the secret scene of the two mail being read at Lyro. Have you seen how horrible the Lyro shelter is built? I know this is not a strategic conversation.
This is not the kind of thing I would look at.
Go back and look at the Lyro shelter. That thing, firstly, it's on the ground, right?
Yeah.
So, The thing's not raised. I actually mentioned it. You know, we're sleeping on the ground. Okay. Now, I don't know why you would not spend the energy to build something that's raised just, you know, 30 centimeters above the ground. Because, I mean, there's stuff crawling around all the time. If it rains, these guys can be so lucky it hasn't rained in the season. If it rains, just, Shannon, think about it. What happens to water when it rains? It stays on the floor. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's where you have to sleep.
Well, Boston Rob and Sandra haven't given a shelter building lesson yet.
Yes.
Maybe that should have been lesson number one.
And the whole lean to it's this triangular branch, this diagonal branch coming out, and then this the bamboo spaced against it, and then there's a hole the size of a windscreen in the roof. If a storm hits this beach in the next episode and it stays for 6 days. These Lyro people are gonna phone production. They're gonna build a cell phone. They're gonna phone Jeff and be like, Jeff, we want to quit. All six of us, we want out now. Right, that's it. We're done. We're not sleeping in this rain. We're not sleeping in this puddle of water. I mean, they can thank their stars that it has not rained on the season yet, because that shelter is. It's go back and look at it. I mean, just try and imagine the Gen X storm and imagine sitting under that.
Yes, well, I doubt they can build a phone if they can't build a shelter. Like, if you're like a phone, it's a degree of difficulty harder than shelter somehow.
Yeah, no, it's something I noticed. Just a small, not really a strategic part, but it's something that adds a bit of flavor to the game. It's the shelters. It's bad. Sure.
And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And we are back. All right, Jacques, it is time for the Chizzy. You've been trying to earn these points throughout your playing career. Now we're going to give out some points. So take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
All right. So this week, I feel like the 3 and 2 were pretty obvious, and I was going back and forth on how to order it. But I'm going to give 3 points to Jamal. Not just for the way he handled the Jack moment, but I did think he did incredibly well in that. But, like, also the way I think it helped his social game and the way it strengthened that relationship, which is really incredible when you think about it, that it actually made their bond stronger. He won Dean socially. He did really well in the immunity challenge. And like, you can even see the way he's reintegrating with the dancing, like you mentioned, like he was on the outs and now he kind of feels like the life of the party, at least in that scene. So I think just the way he socially played this episode and ostensibly, you know, the episodes before to kind of get these relationships to where they are is really positive. I'm going to give 2 points to Elaine. I have to dock a point because I just really don't love that her read on the 4-4 seemed to be super wrong. She did say that she wanted to tell them about the advantage Missy and Aaron in case they ever, you know, were scared enough into flipping, but I think she thought they were going to rock. So I'm docking her a point, but I thought she was right to jump at the task. She pulled it off. She used it well. She kept Lyra on her side. She really, really saved Lyra. So I'm giving her 2 points. The one point I thought was really difficult, you know, I thought, as I said, that the Vokai 4 did pretty well and their only fault was not flipping Missy and Aaron in really hard circumstances. They planned for every contingency pretty much except for this unbeatable advantage and they still lost, but I didn't feel like there was a person between them. I would give a Chizzy point to. Wasn't going to be giving to Aaron, who almost voted himself out potentially. I didn't really feel like I could credit a lot to Missy. Elizabeth, we've talked about her subtle social play, always so good, but I didn't think it was really worth a point. So I was going to give a point to Dean, who went from obviously being swap screwed and kind of on the outs, and just from that short scene of him becoming a swing vote and Nora wanting to work with him and him obviously having a relationship with Jamal and kind of choosing Jamal and going to him and finding someone he could work with better and have a real relationship with, I think was actually pretty good. And now he's a swing vote and he maybe has some new friends. It's all about making friends. I think Dean made a friend, so I'm going to give him a point for that.
Wow, that's Dean. He is...
Good job, Dean.
That's impressive. Yeah, well done, Dean. okay. Shannon, I think very accurate. I think I also gave 3 points to Jamal.
Mm-hmm.
All the reasons you mentioned. And to the coolness. I don't want to say this verbatim, you know, copy-paste, but a lot of that, those people who get the quote-unquote godfather titles, you know, somebody like Rob in his fourth season, Werner in our season, Rob Bentley in our season, where people come to them. I get almost that kind of vibe now for me, where it's like, you know, Dean is coming to him. You know, it's like he's this enigmatic person in the middle and everybody is gravitating towards him to come and share information with him. And we know how powerful a game you can build around that. So I won't be surprised if we see Jamal's game, you know, playing out like that. 2 points, same as you, Elaine. I mentioned also she could have maybe, you know, bought a bit more leverage that advantage to get some social capital from the opposing players. But, you know, the way she got it, you know, having the grit to steal in the challenge, playing it out, saving a tribe, I think that, you know, that's a cool move. And let's say, side note, let's say Elaine gets voted out next, right? People can complain about this move. If Elaine gets voted out next, for the rest of her life, if she's 8 years old and her kids watch her survive and be like, Grandma, why did you not survive it? She's like, well, kids, gather around. I'm going to tell you about the time when this can of biscuits got an advantage and saved my tribe. And that moment is going to be with her the rest of her life, whatever happens afterwards. So that's cool that people get these moments. And I'm very glad for Elaine that she could actually, you know, be made such a cool game move. And then my number one.
Elaine is still referring to herself as biscuits. Very
yes. Yes, and she's very strict on who's allowed to get the biscuits or not. You know, she doesn't want strict dietary requirements because you know, it's not her kids and the kids are just visiting.
Well, I've heard you got to risk it to get the biscuit, and she did.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yes, she did. And my number one, like I mentioned earlier, that small bit you have to go back and really appreciate it is the Kelly moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kelly is somebody who, from that whole sequence. And she's also somebody, she could have got offensive about what happened. And she's so cool dancing with Jamal. And it's a, like you mentioned, the Harvard tag to be able to drop that and not be a boot because you're this academic person, but to be, you know, so in with the people. It's a very underrated skill in Survivor. And I think it's something that's gonna help her get far in this game. So my last one is to the idol in the hair, Hider Kelly.
Well, I love it. And so, yeah, Jamal is our Chizzy winner for the week. I feel like I'm glad we can agree on that. And I feel like it's only fitting that you've now given out Chizzy points to someone who complained about the Chizzy a lot and really made it a focus.
Yes, my I sent Leroux a message. I said, very tongue-in-cheek, I said, you know, Survivor was always a stepping stone for me to become a podcaster.
And now people can complain to you if they don't like your
and now,
voice.
Now that I'm doing podcasting, my new target is to be able to have given a chizzy point. So I'm just living the high life, you know, ticking all the boxes. So there's no way for me to go but up. So yeah, I'm very happy.
Jacques, I love your respect for the chizzy. I have to say, like, you know, I live for the chizzy, and the fact that you really bought into it is really what I want.
I'm still slightly upset that after I did probably one of the best moves of our season, I didn't give him a single point. I'm still having nightmares about that moment, going back in time.
The one, the button up the shirt.
The idol. Yeah.
Well, you got points from the others, but I didn't give. Are you still thinking about that?
I'm screaming at night. I'm like, what's wrong? I'm still doing what? Shadow not giving me a point.
You got points from the others. Like, did you need points from all three of us? Think about it. You've now caused someone to have nightmares from your chizzy points. It's a lot of responsibility. I hope you can wear it as well as I'm clearly wearing it.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, if in order for it to be a winner, there has to be a loser. So I'm very unfortunate. It's very unfortunate. I mean, you can't get everybody a chizzy, but
we try.
It's fun.
We do try. All right. Well, we have some questions from the listeners. Danielle Winslow wants to ask you which lesson you would have found most useful so far on the Island of the Idols, if any. So what do we have? We have fire. We have persuasion. We have Vince looking for stuff in the middle of the night. We have being daring.
Omicron.
Yeah. Being daring. What did Kelly do? Kelly was listening. That one was a difficult one. Which is any of this useful? Literally any of this.
I actually, contrary to what people think, I think listening is a very underrated skill.
Did you need to learn it?
Well, you need to know. You need to know you have to do it. I don't think there's a lesson plan, but it's like, be aware that you have to listen to people and make them feel special. That's a big lesson. The other one, daring, I would take the risk any time of day. That's not something I have to teach me.
But how daring do Elaine even have to be? Like, if they had seen her, and this has been said on multiple podcasts, like, if they had seen her, it didn't really matter.
What can they do? And then the persuasion one. I think something in Survivor, and I've mentioned this a lot after the show, it's probably my biggest takeaway. It's the how you say it, not the what you say. And that ties into persuasion. I think a lot of times people say the right thing, but they don't say the right way. And that's a lesson they should... If they don't have it in the book, they should teach it next week, because that's a big one these people are going to need. Aaron needed that lesson 2 weeks ago.
Approach.
Changed the way you play the game.
Approach. Yeah, that'd be a good one. Don't tell people. Ask people. You know, like, that's like a big Tyson thing. It's like, I think persuasion was the best one we spoke about on the last podcast. But again, I think it kind of missed a lot of what you need for persuasion, which is the social relationships. But that to me was really cool. Some of this other stuff, like, was this even a task? Like, it was, she could have got a clue that was like, you have to find the idol at the challenge. Like, many people have done that. You did it.
Yeah, I don't know what lessons are left. And I don't know what lesson you teach somebody. Let's say it's day 28. I mean, there's a week left in the game. What lesson can we teach them? You can maybe give them a lesson about the end game.
At a point, it's going to be like Final Tribal Council speeches, fire again, maybe. When it becomes like super important at Final Four.
Maybe we see Elizabeth getting back ready for round two and she smashes Rob. We might know.
Yeah, it's true. What are they going to be doing on day 28 where it's like, okay, we're going to teach you again, like, maybe approach. It's like, wow, you know, I'm a month into this game. I really could have used that several weeks ago. Like, this is now pretty irrelevant to me. Yeah, like, my bet is made at this point.
Navigate the end game. You know, what do you do in the final four, final three? Maybe give them information. Tell them it's not a final four, it's a final two. I don't know if that's allowed. I don't know.
Not really, like, help. Like, that's helping them, but it's not teaching
them. That's helping them. Yeah, it's not the teaching. I do agree.
Yeah, any lessons that they're going to be teaching them, like, they pretty much, like, need to know at this point, like, ASAP. Like, it's going to start becoming irrelevant. They're starting to lose the game, you know?
Yes.
Keith Friedrich asks, how long could Elaine have waited before announcing the vote cancel? Could she have done it from the voting booth? Because I think it made it seem a bit earlier than it was. Like Jason said in Exit Press that it was really only 3 or 4 minutes that they had after she announced it. So it probably was towards the end of Tribal Council. But like, how different would things have been? I mean, still Jason would have gone home, but they would have voted for Aaron if she had blocked a vote after they voted and that one just didn't count.
Obviously, I think I didn't get a zoom in on the athletic exactly how, you know, the bolts and nuts of what's on that parchment. But I'm assuming she had to announce it to Jeff that she's doing it before the people vote. I don't think you block the vote in the urn that Jeff doesn't read it and be like, the 7 votes, somebody's going home. I think it's one of those, this is a trap where you want to spring it as late as possible on them to don't give him time to act.
Because they still tried to act and they didn't pull it together, but maybe if they'd had even more time, they might have.
And we know Jeff always says, you know, we can stay here for hours into the night, but, you know, I'm scheduled tomorrow and then you get back to camp and set up with challenges. So they also have a bit of an eye on the clock. So, but I agree, springing this as late as possible is the best, unless, I don't say you tell the whole tribe, but unless approaching one person earlier, like I mentioned, and saying, I can't tell what you have, I have something, come with us. But that's a different question, yeah.
If you think you're at war, try and surprise them, which they did. If you're trying to make friends, go have that relationship.
In war, it's probably in the Art of War somewhere. I don't know by heart or have ever read it, but it's probably something like saying you need to keep your trap at the last possible moment or something like that.
It's definitely the BR rule book, at least. Chuck Smith, like those two things are the same, the Art of War and the BR rule book.
Yeah, it's exactly the same.
Chuck Smith asks, how did you come up with your Wandoff submission? So if anyone missed, Jacques got onto the Wandoff. I was laughing so hard.
Did you get my whole bit?
I could listen to it on the SoundCloud. It was great. You and LaRue are representing Survivor South Africa so well, just like doing me proud by submitting Wandoffs.
Listen, this is another nightmare I have. I listen to the Wandoff, really. I don't want to shade people, but I do think mine was maybe not in execution. I'm probably the least musical person, you know. But I think mine was lyrically like top three for that season, and it didn't get an honorable mention. And it's only the hook. I mean, nobody, if you're not a patron, can get into, you know, the whole cool bit of my whole. I painted the whole picture of what happened to Nora. I'm still in shock that I didn't get final five. No, I spoke to someone somebody told me, I spoke to somebody out of Wandoff, and I said, I'm never able to sing, but maybe I'll do an Eminem rap one once. And I jokingly said, you have to make it like a play on Lose Yourself and just make the song Choose Yourself. And then Nora chose herself for that challenge. And I'm like, this has to happen. So you have to choose yourself. And so then I just, I don't listen to a lot of rap music. Listened to a bit of Eminem. Was at the live show in New South Africa. And then I just, you know, sat down, jotted down a couple of lines and recorded in like an hour. But very fun doing it. Like I said, I'm the least musical person. So there's no way I'm doing anything other than like a rap or a, that's it. There's nothing else I can sing.
Well, I loved it. Top five in my heart, but I feel like Casey Kasem and I can commiserate about what it's like to deny you a Wandoff top five or a Chizzy point.
Yes.
And
yes.
Have you mentioning it months later?
So many knives I'm getting ready for all these RHP people, you know.
I feel like we need to deal with these like underlying issues.
I need to contact them and be like, I know I can speak to the psychologist. I need to see her now. I've got some issues.
Chizzy points.
Points.
I have enough issues with them that I don't need them calling me being like, why are you psychologically torturing the contestants by denying them chizzy points? They're just like in my office crying about your chizzy points. And I'd be like, well, I'm glad that they're listening to the podcast and honoring the chizzy, but I don't want anyone to be like up at night about it.
Listen, Mnet, they get free marketing from what you guys are doing, so I don't think they got a leg to stand on.
I agree. I mean, Mnet are coming around. My relationship with Mnet is progressing. Anyway, that's all I have today, Jacques.
Is that all we have?
It was a lot.
It's now the end.
Yes,
that's
it was
all
fun,
she wrote.
Right? It was fun. What is the hashtag for people who made it to the end? I have hashtag cheating face socks because I agree that it's definitely against the rules. It shouldn't be allowed. I totally agree with you.
I'm down with that one, definitely. I'll also tag Jeff Probst and Matt Van Wagenen while we're busy. You know, this has got to stop. What's the end game? If this continues, you know, and it spirals out of control in Survivor, like, you know, the show can go on a tangent with certain themes and advantages. Where does the family member on your clothing stop? We don't know what the end game is. So let's snip it in the bud right now. and let's just be done with this.
You grossly overestimate how much Jeff would care about this, which is not at all. He definitely doesn't care, but I care. I get it. It's not fair. You should have to win those socks as a luxury item. You shouldn't just get to look at your son's face. No one else is looking at their kid's face.
Everybody sends pictures of a loved one, and they put it on. They know what your shoe size is. They put it on socks, and you can get it in a reward. That is. We are giving these people. We are giving production what they need to hear. That is the next award. Season 40, not going to be that important. Season 41, that's what you add. Or a shirt with your loved one's face on. Boom.
Well, if any of my wedding's groomsmen ever go on Survivor, they can look at my fiance's face on their ankles because that's what we're doing. That's the kind of wedding this is apparently becoming. So, damn Survivor ingrained marketing getting to me, even when I know it's wrong, but... Jacques, you changed your Twitter handle. Where can people find you now? This was a blindside. I put up the question thread and tagged someone who doesn't exist, and you completely changed your handle.
Yes, that handle I created almost a decade ago, which was like a nickname I had at the time in race, and it's not relevant at all anymore. This is the first time I'm going to say it. You can now get me at Jacques B. Tweeten. You have to say it like a pirate because there's one character short. I can't say tweeting. So it's Jacques B. Tweeting.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
It's cool. It builds into my brand. Exactly. Not that I have a massive social media brand, but it's quirky and cool. And I like it. So yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. What about Instagram? Well, you're mainly Twitter, but anything else?
Mainly Twitter. I do Instagram as well, but then it's you know, a picture of me and my friends brawling. It's not really Survivor related.
I'm interested. Yeah. Anyway.
appreciate it.
You can follow me at Shannon Gates on Twitter and Instagram. Subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed, as always, where you can get all of this. Your podcast, Survivor Global, is also on the Survivor Island of the Idols feed, and all of my stuff is on the Reality TV Wrap-Ups feed, so it's really no excuse not to listen, because it's kind of everywhere. Leave us a review and a star rating if you can. Tell your friends about this new podcast that we're doing. I was really appreciative of the really cool feedback we got for the Peer podcast 2 weeks ago, and I'm just really happy with the way it's all going, so I hope that you guys can kind of support us and tell some people about it. In 2 weeks, Survivor Global will be back for episode 8, I guess, unless there's a double 8 or 9, I don't know.
Ooh.
And it'll be the great Lisa Stanger from Survivor New Zealand. Last year, people have been calling for her to be on a recap ever since, and I totally agree. So she will be back with me in 2 weeks. And besides that, we've just did some more Australian Survivor deep dives because some people were very, very busy with their schedules. Harry and David are now up. David was literally on All Stars, so that's why he couldn't do it, and now he can. So we did those deep dives, and we're currently working out something with Nico Jacques, so that's a big deal. There's a lot going on.
Nico Panaglio,
subscribed. Yes, Nico, the host of Survivor South Africa, apparently is really into the podcast, which is amazing to hear, and he wants to come on, so we're working it out.
Okay, I would be interesting to hear Nico's perspective on the game.
Me too.
He doesn't do a lot of, like, LaRue, and he's, you know, tweeting a bit about Survivor and gives, you know, Nico's stuff. I don't think he tweets about Survivor at all. From like
a great show.
It will definitely, you guys, yeah, this is a once-in-a-lifetime scoop, getting a host on in a deep dive or an interview. That's really cool, Shannon. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
Me too. Well, yeah, a lot going on. Make sure to subscribe, tell your friends. But Jacques, thank you so much for being the first SA representative on Survivor Global. Super fun chat, and I'm really glad we got to do this.
Yeah, Shannon, thanks so much. I appreciate it. And if none of my other 20 castmates want to ever join you, I'll chat Survivor with you every week. You know, I love it. So, yeah, you know where to find me.
Super, super fun. Well, thank you so much, Jacques. Yeah. Again, thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thanks to you all for listening, as always. And I will see you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans, 12 ordinary Australians.
16
New Zealanders.
1 million pounds.
Million euro.
Million rubli.
The adventure of a lifetime.
The adventure of a lifetime.